This from John's Gospel, chapter 15. Jesus says, "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I've loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that one lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends. No longer do I call you servants, for the servant does not know what his master is doing, but I've called you friends. For all that I've heard from my Father, I've made known to you. I've called you friends and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, that your fruit should abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give it to you." This passage in John's Gospel occurs fairly late in the story, another chapter or so, and Jesus makes his way to Jerusalem. It's kind of a graduation exercise for the disciples. When they first show up in his life, they are strangers to each other, strangers to him, I suspect. They go through a kind of apprenticeship process. They learn what Jesus is about. Jesus equips them, sends them out. Sometimes they succeed, sometimes they don't. And now they're back together heading to Jerusalem, and he calls them friends. He calls them friends. It's among the highest office I think there is to be someone's friend. I have a working definition of friendship that I've learned over the years. It's kind of evolved. And by this definition, none of us have all that many of these. Many would say if we have one or two in this category and by this criteria, we're uncommonly lucky. I think a friend is someone who, if you need something badly, and they have it, and it would be hard for them to give it to you, and you need it now, there would be no question. Now, this is often not a material thing. This is often time and attention and emotional support and undivided drop everything and be with. Something that we need now that's hard for someone to give, and they would do it anyway. That's your friend. Jesus became friends with his disciples. He asked them to do terribly difficult things. The best records we have suggest they all died violently for his sake. He called them friends. Now, I've used this text many times over the years, but usually the love one another component. The friend piece, I know I've only used it in a sermon one other time, and that was at Brian Williams III's funeral. I called him friend, and I was lucky. Well, in that light and by that definition, I have to tell you, we had more softball drama this week. The regular season ended. My team finished the season in second place, one game behind our chief rival, two games ahead of the next team, and we have the end of season tournament, which is a reset button. Everybody's in it. It's a 12-team double elimination thing. Now, we have a rule in tournament time. A regular softball team is composed of 10 players, and not everybody can show up every night. So in our league, anybody who's on another team that's not playing at that moment can sign up and sub in, and that works out really well. In the tournament, you have to bring 8 people to the field, and you can only pick up one. Rules are a little different on subbing. And my team's game was at 7 o'clock on one field, and our chief rival's game was at 7 o'clock on the other field, just 100 yards apart or so. My team won our game by forfeit. Our opponent that night couldn't bring enough players to the field, so we thought we'd have practice. Our chief rival's team brought 8 players to the field, and word was sent to our field, they need a sub. Our best player said, "Well, I can do that." Our team said, "Hold on a second. Let's think about this." And by consensus and under my leadership, we said, "Stay here and practice." Our chief rival's team is coached by my first friend in softball. And if I had to say, who's your best friend in softball, I would say him. And he fits that definition of friend I just gave you. And in thinking about that all week, it occurred to me that by consensus, but under my leadership and on my watch, we settled for the lesser good, a competitive advantage, in favor of the higher good, which is friendship. As it turned out, they lost that first game, and in double elimination, they had to play another game that night and lost it, and they're out. We did not. We are in the winner's bracket. Odds on favored to win tomorrow night. And even if we do, we will not have won by playing the best team. I have mixed feelings about this and have had all week. Settling for the lesser good in favor of friendship. Now, that's not the first time I've done that, nor will it be the last, and I suspect we're all in that boat. But friendship is a sacred thing. It is a deeply personal and emotional experience for two reasons. I think friendship, if you are someone's friend and they know you in that way, it is a deep and profound privilege that someone in your life would, if they were deep in the soup, come and talk to you about it, tell you what was going on, maybe ask for insight, but more than even insight or direction, just simply ask you to stay with them for a little while and help them figure it out. In other words, be there. Knowing deeply personal things, maybe humiliating things, deep secrets, few others, if any, know. And when someone takes you into their confidence and asks for your trust, it is a deep and profound privilege. The other side of that, of course, is knowing you have someone in your life to whom you can go for that same reason, to whom you can go. And they, through having paid perhaps steep tuition at the school of experience, will say, you know, I have been there, and this is what I did, and this is what helped, and this is what didn't. And your experience will be different. But to have someone who teaches you to cope rather than solves your problem is a deep and profound and holy gift. These are our friends. Well, Jesus calls us all, in a sense, to be friends, to, by and large, come to one place to learn again the story of how he calls us friends and gives us enabling presence and forgiving trust each week. Friendship is also a calling. It's a privilege, it's a blessing, and it is the highest calling we have. To be for one another the best we can possibly be. To seek the higher good, which is friendship, in favor of even competitive advantage. I don't know anything else that has anywhere close to any level of power to push back on American culture these days than friendship. Blue states and red states are seeking competitive advantage in ways that are divisive and degrading and deceitful and deeply troubling. And I suspect that there are friends on both sides of that story, maybe even people who live in the same house on the red state, blue state divide, that at least this year that difference carries a more profound edge than typical because of the level of rancor and discord that characterizes our country. I only know one way out, and that is to push back on that discord by seeking the higher good, which is friendship. To cherish what we have in common, even if what we have in common is failure and frailty. To draw strength from our strength as we give it away. To draw strength from others as they bring it to us. I looked this up. In exactly 30 days, 12 hours, and 30 minutes, Election Day will be over. No matter who wins the election, in no longer than 8 years, that person's presidency will end. And in 30 days, 11 hours, and 30 minutes, we will still have our friends. And in 8 years, by God's grace, we will still have our friends. And in that spirit, and at the call of Jesus to love one another, and to love one another as he calls us friends, I would invite us to push back on the increasingly rancorous tide of cultural discord, to push back by seeking the higher good today. When in doubt, put friends first. Amen.